This week on the Out of Chicago podcast, equipment for night photography in the city, an interview with Jim Phillips and Pat Armel of ChicagoLoopBridges.com, and a Chicago location, the Chicago Theater, at night. Thank you very much for joining me. I'm your host, Chris Smith, and this is the third episode of the Out of Chicago podcast. Today, going to be a good episode. We're going to talk first about one of my favorite things, and that is night photography. Actually, over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about different aspects of shooting at night in the city. And for this first week, we're going to talk about the equipment. We're going to talk about the equipment that I use. After that, we'll have an interview with two of my favorite people in the Chicago community, and that's Jim Phillips and Pat Armel. They run the site ChicagoLoopBridges.com, and it's the place that I go to whenever I need information on when are they raising the bridges or what's going on with construction or anything like that. And I think that you're really going to like the interview with them. They're going to give you a lot of places to shoot from, a lot of tips for shooting the bridges, and I think you'll learn a couple of places that you hadn't thought of shooting from before after listening to that interview. And then in our third segment, we're going to talk about one of my favorite Chicago locations, and that's the Chicago Theater. We're going to talk about some of the best places to shoot the Chicago Theater at night, and you can use those tips and the equipment that we give you. Well, we're not giving you equipment. We're giving you the tips in the first section of the podcast. But before we get into our three segments, I first want to tell you about an upcoming event, and that is probably my favorite photographer of all time, and that's Art Wolf. Art Wolf is going to be coming to Chicago on July 12th. He'll be giving his seminar, The Art of Composition, and it's going to be at Loyola University. It's going to be fantastic. If you've ever seen Art on, Travels to the Edge, or you follow him online, you know that he's an amazing photographer, and not only that, but he's a fantastic teacher. You're going to learn a ton, and it's going to be a great day. It's kind of a one-day seminar. It's July 12th, and he actually sent me a coupon code for 15% off, and the code is Chicago2014, and I've left a link in the show notes so that you can go and sign up to see Art Wolf in Chicago on July 12th. You know I'll be there, and I'll see you there. So our first segment today is about equipment for night photography in the city. I'm going to tell you what I use and tell you kind of how I made those decisions about what things I'm going to be using. First thing I want to talk about is probably the most important thing when you're shooting out at night, and that is a good tripod. I recommend that you really put your money into finding a good tripod, do a lot of research, and get one that's going to work well. Now, a great tripod is not necessarily going to make your photos better. A great tripod's going to make your life easier. It's going to make it so that it's quicker to set up a good shot. It's going to make it so that when you're carrying your tripod around, you feel safe, that it's secure, that the camera's not going to fall off the tripod. And in the end, if it makes things easier, if it makes your job easier, and you get to a good shot quicker, well, then I take it back. It does make your photos better by having a good tripod. And I found that when I went from having kind of a cheaper Manfrotto tripod to the tripod I have now, which is a nice Gitzo tripod, I found that it made a huge difference in my photography. And it made a bigger difference in my photography more than a newer camera or newer lenses did. The tripod made a huge difference. The tripod I use now is like a Gitzo. I think it's a 3541 LS, and it's nice. It doesn't have a column in the center. You can go down super low because of it. That was one of the things I was looking for. And on it, I have like an Arca Swiss ball head, and on that, I have a really right stuff clamp, and I have the really right stuff L plate on my camera. So you put that all together, kind of a Frankenstein tripod, but to me, it's like best of both worlds, and that's the thing that I put most time and effort into, is figuring out the right tripod to get. As far as a camera, really, any camera is going to work. Personally, I want to have something where I can change the lenses on it, but really, any camera out there at night is going to work. If you've got a tripod that you can work off of, and you've got some decent lenses, you're going to be able to get great night shots. So how about those lenses? Well, first off, I see a lot of people looking for, well, it's dark, and so they want to get fast glass. You don't want to be shooting at 2.8. You don't want to be shooting at f4 when you're shooting at night on a tripod. You want to shoot at like f8. You want to shoot at f11. So there's really no reason to get that fast glass. Like one lens in particular, a lot of people like to go for that, like the Tokina 11 to 16 millimeter. And part of the reason they want to get it is because it's got the 2.8 aperture. If you're shooting night photography, if you're shooting off of a tripod, I just don't think that that's necessary. So what is really important? Well, I think in terms of your lens, the things that are more important than that aperture would be, well, I think size and weight are important because you're going to be walking all over the city. I also think that, your sharpness, of course, you want a sharp lens. But maybe even more important than that, you want a lens that has that really handles flare well and chromatic aberration, but especially flare, because when you're shooting at night, if you have a lens that has a hard time with flare, you're going to get streetlights in that. They're going to mess up your shot, and that's one of the most important considerations. When I was shooting more portraits and doing like family photography and that and events, I had the Canon 70-200 2.8L lens, and that's a fantastic lens, no doubt about it. The problem was I was taking it downtown and I was using it to shoot the city, and it's a big, big, heavy lens. And when I'd get down there, I'd say, okay, I've got my 70-200 2.8, I'm going to shoot it at f8 all day. And that was really frustrating to have such a big, heavy lens and not really need it to be a big, heavy lens. And so eventually I sold that lens, and when I started to concentrate more on the city-type photography, I sold it, and I got the new Canon 70-300L, which is much lighter, much, much shorter, and it is a variable aperture. It's like 4.5 to 5.6, something like that. But that's great. I mean, I shoot it at f8, I shoot it at f11, and that's all I need. And it's perfect. I love it because it collapses down. It goes so small that you can put it in your backpack, like straight up and down. You don't even have to lay it down in the backpack. That makes a big difference in terms of fitting things in. And it's cheaper. I was able to save some more money and put that towards some other things rather than have that 70-200. So with lenses, you don't need to have the fast glass, but find something that's going to be sharp, maybe a little bit lighter, and it doesn't have to be the most expensive thing. Next thing to consider are your filters. And my biggest recommendation, if you're going to be shooting at night, is to take your filters off. Whether that's a UV filter or a polarizer or whatever it may be, I recommend that you don't shoot with filters. And the reason is that you can create a ghosting effect, and you can create more flare that can really ruin a photo. What happens is that if the light comes in, it goes past your filter, it can hit then the front element of the lens on the other side of the filter, bounce back off, and then actually bounce back off again the inside of that filter and come back into the front element, creating the image a second time. Like, that's where we get that ghosting effect. Well, if it actually bounces around, you know, two or three times and keeps doing that, then you can get an image where it's maybe it's a building, and right next to it you see the building again, and then you see it again right next to it. That's that ghosting that we're talking about. That's really difficult to remove in post-processing. And I've been out shooting with people, and they haven't done a lot of night photography, and they've got their UV filters on to protect their lenses. And what happens is at the end of the night, we go to kind of look through some of their photos, and we see, well, why does this building show up four times in the photo? Well, that's what happens when you have a filter on there. And if you haven't shot at night before, you don't want to go out there and have, you know, your entire night ruined of night photography. So I really recommend that you do not have filters on your lenses. Whether that's a protective filter or a polarizer or whatever, I recommend that you try your best to avoid them. As far as other types of filters, like a neutral density filter or a graduated neutral density filter, typically I don't think it's necessary. I might use a neutral density filter during the day to get longer exposures, but at night you can just go down to ISO 100 or 200, your lowest ISO for your camera, and that's going to be good enough. The graduated neutral density filters, I think nowadays, if you bracket, maybe bracket get 3 shots or 5 shots, there's not a lot of reason to then have to also use a neutral density filter. You can combine those together in Lightroom, Photoshop. I guess if you're actually combining them together, it's going to be in Photoshop or in HDR software. And I think that you're going to get just as good of an effect. And I don't think that a graduated neutral density filter is necessary. If you're used to using them and you love them, go for it. But I don't think it's absolutely necessary. So as far as filters go at night, I think that you avoid them as much as you can. Another thing that if you haven't shot at night a lot, that you might not think about is using a lens hood. First off, I recommend using a lens hood on all your lenses all the time, simply for protective purposes. If you drop the thing, it's actually even better to protect the front element than, say, a UV filter. The lens hood is going to keep it, it's going to absorb a lot of the shock if you drop it on the front of it, and that's going to keep it safe. Or if you're walking through a crowd, it's going to keep it from anything touching the front element. So I recommend you always have your lens hood on. But especially when you're shooting at night, because when you're shooting at night, you might think to yourself, well, it's dark, there's not going to be the sun that I have to worry about coming in at a stray angle into the lens. But you're going to have street lights, and if those street lights are near you and they come in from like that glancing angle, that light can then be it can create flare and get scattered back into the sensor. But when you have your lens hood on, you can prevent a lot of that light from entering. So always use a lens hood, and especially use a lens hood when you're shooting at night. At night, you're going to be shooting a lot of long exposures. So you want to think about how are you going to trigger your camera without shaking it and actually pressing the button and worrying about that, some shake in there and giving you a blurry image. The first thought then is using a cable release. Cable release, you plug it into the side of the thing. It might be the type of release that it's simply a button, or it might be the time that's an intervalometer, or you can do, time lapses. Also, to me, I personally like to use the 2-second delay on the camera. So I hit the button instead of, when you put it on a different setting. It's not on the setting for multiple shots or for a single shot, it's on the setting for a 2-second delay. So once you hit it, 2 seconds later, it takes a picture. 2 seconds is enough time that after you press a button and you pull your hands away, that any kind of shaking that you've added to the thing has settled down and is gone. So I always use a 2-second delay. And someone said to me before, I thought this was pretty funny. Actually, it was at a presentation that I was watching and they were referring to me, maybe not by name. And they said, some people like to use a 2-second delay in their camera, but they said that they found that life is just too short to use the 2-second delay. Well, I'm kind of the opposite camp. To me, I'd rather slow down. I'd rather do whatever it takes to actually take a little bit longer to set up every shot and to get it exactly right. And if I know that I'm going to have to also wait 2 seconds, then I'm going to make sure that I've got it set up just the way that I want it. And I do that for, when I'm shooting on a tripod, I do it for every single shot. I put it on 2-second delay and every single shot is like that. If you're thinking, I wanted to shoot like car trails, I wanted to see a car coming by my camera, how am I going to time it? Well, once you do the 2-second delay for very long, you're going to find that you can time it very easily. Say the bus is about 6 seconds away and you want to get it right when it's in front of you, then you're going to wait 4 seconds, hit the trigger, you'll be able to time it. You're not going to have a problem figuring out exactly, or at least approximately, when to hit that shutter release. The other thing you might look at instead of a cable release is some smartphone apps. A lot of the cameras nowadays have the built-in Wi-Fi. You can use your iPhone or whatever smartphone to trigger it. I've found that those things actually have a bit of a delay in them, and usually I don't want it when I'm actually using that. I want it to trigger right then. Otherwise, I'd use the 2-second delay. So I think that the smartphone apps still aren't quite there. I've used the one on my Canon. I've used the one on my Olympus. I don't think they're quite there yet. And they're a little, like I said, a little laggy. And they're just not quite there. So to me, it's a 2-second delay. If you use a cable release, that's great. The biggest reason I don't use a cable release is I just don't like things hanging down from my camera. I like to fold up my tripod legs, throw the camera over my shoulder, and get onto my next destination. And when I have that cable release plugged into it and hanging down, that's just one extra thing that I've got to figure out. Where's that going to go? How do I hold on to it? Make sure it doesn't get snagged in one of the legs of my tripod or anything like that. So for me, it's a 2-second delay, and I think for the foreseeable future, that's what it's going to be. A couple other things you want to have in your backpack when you're going out to shoot at night. Well, I think you need to have some sort of a lens cloth or, you know, like a little rocket blower type thing, just a small one that you carry in your backpack. The reason for that is that you want the front element of your lens to be very clean when you're shooting at night. You might be shooting during the day and you're shooting at 2.8, you're shooting at f4, and it's really dusty on the front of your lens. You're never going to notice it. But as soon as you start shooting at night and there's streetlights around and you're probably shooting at f11 or whatever, when you're out shooting like that at a small aperture, the dust is really going to show up. And the other thing it does is those streetlights that are near you, they're going to hit the dust. The dust scatters the light. It can reflect it off in different directions. And some of that's going to go back and it's going to hit your sensor. And if you've ever had a picture that you've taken where it's like got all these starbursts because of all the streetlights that are in there, you got all these starbursts, but then at the same time, there's also like these kind of like smudges, circles on the thing. It's most likely that there's dust on the front of your lens. And so I strongly recommend that you have some kind of a lens cloth, a blower, that you clean all your lenses before you leave. It might not be something that's important during the day, but when you're going to shoot at night, you want the front of your lenses to be clean. Another thing that I have in my bag whenever I go shoot at night is some sort of a flashlight. My favorite is made by a company called Petzl. It's the Zipka Plus 2. And what it is it's a headlamp, kind of like, I mean, you look like kind of a nerd wearing it. But if you put it on, it's perfect because you, if you're looking in your bag or whatever, you can just turn your head. It turns with you. If you're walking around, you've got all your hands free. But the one that I have is nice because, and I think it's why it's called the Zipka, it's like it retracts back into the flashlight itself, the part that goes around your head. And so instead of having like this band that would take up a lot of space, it actually retracts back into it. And when you pull it out, that can go around your head. When it goes back in, it's nice and compact and fits easily in your camera bag. So that's the Petzl Zipka Plus 2. And I think that's kind of the perfect thing for a flashlight. You don't have to use your hands, and yet it's very, very small and puts out a lot of light. Another thing I'll have is, and this is something that's going to always be on you, is any apps on your phone. One that I'd recommend for shooting at night, well, if I go shoot at night, really what I'm doing is I'm going before it gets totally dark. And so I'm going to look for that place where the sun is just right for a sunset. And then maybe I want to find a different place where the sun is perfect. Well, it's gone down and the area is perfect for blue hour. And then after that, I'm going to go shoot at night. But I need to know the timing of these things. I need to know when is the sun going to set? When are we looking at having blue hour? When is it going to be night? And my favorite app for that is Rick Salmon's Photo Sundial, the Photo Sundial app, and it's by Craig Ellis, and he's also helping me with my Out of Chicago, Photographer's Guide to Chicago app. He's done this Photo Sundial, and it's phenomenal. And what it does is it will tell you exactly, you know, you can look on the map and see where you are. It will tell you when is the sun going to set. It's going to tell you, you know, how long is that blue hour going to last? It gives you all those times, and you can really plan your day all around that. But beyond that, the app itself has all the tips from Rick Salmon as far as shooting these times a day, shooting the sunset especially. And so it's a great app. Once you get on your phone, I can't remember, it's $2.99, $3.99. It's a cheap app. Once you get it on your phone, it's there forever, and it's very helpful when you're shooting around sunrise, shooting around sunset. And the last thing I make sure that I have in my bag, this is a personal thing, and you're going to have your own things. For me, it's migraine medicine. I'll often get migraines, not usually when I'm out shooting, but when I get a migraine, if I feel it coming on and I can take the medicine, I can usually prevent it from coming on. And so whatever it is for you that is something, you know, whether it's medicine or whatever other personal effects, you want to have those with you. you bring all these other things, but you don't want the night to be ruined because you get a headache, because you're getting sick or anything like that. So to me, I'd make sure I got my migraine medicine in there as well. So that's the equipment for night photography. Have a good tripod. Really, any camera is going to be fine. Get lenses that are sharp but small and light. You don't need to go for that 2.8 glass. Filters, take them off. Lens hoods, keep them on. I use a 2-second delay. Have some sort of a lens cloth or a blower in your bag. Have a flashlight so that you can see when it's dark. Get a good app on your phone and any kind of medicine that you might need. All that, and you're all set for night photography. So over the next few weeks, we'll talk a little bit about some tips for once you get out there and you start shooting at night. So our second segment is going to be our interview with Jim Phillips and Pat Armel. They run the site ChicagoLoopBridges.com. They give you all the information about the bridges, as far as the history and current information about construction, when there's going to be bridge lifts. They run tours. You're going to like the interview. You're going to like both Jim and Pat, and you're going to get a lot of great tips on photographing the bridges. So here we go. All right, welcome, Jim Phillips and Pat Armel. Welcome to the Out of Chicago podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, you guys run the site, ChicagoLoopBridges.com. How long have you guys been running that now?
That site went live in 2008.
And you've been going strong the whole time, right?
Yeah, it's been one of those things where you put something up and then you continually tweak it, and so there was a lot of tweaking early, but now it's kind of reached equilibrium, and but it still requires a bit of time to keep updated.
Yeah, believe me, I know with the Out of Chicago site. So you guys started it together, right?
Yeah. Well,
not really.
So tell me the story.
Well, I had done some research for my book, 2 miles, 18 bridges, a walk along the Chicago River. And the website was kind of a companion to that as okay. Sort of a way to publicize the book, for one thing, but also to just get the information out there. It certainly seemed at the time that I went live that there wasn't a lot of easily accessible information about the movable bridges downtown.
Well, I know that whenever I look for it, I only find your site, and that's the place I go. I know that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I felt there was a need, and you know, it's kind of an old guy's retirement project. So it's kind of a labor of love in some respects. And you know, you spend so much time learning about it. You just want to share the information with people because it does seem like there's a fair amount of interest in it.
No, there is, and you can tell it's a labor of love. The site is amazing, a lot of information there. Tell me a little bit more about this book. Is that still something that is available?
It's available online. It's an e-book, and it's available kind of from my site. I am currently working on a second edition, I guess you could say. I was kind of naive when I first finished that book, and I've learned a fair amount over the years doing tours and just observing what people seem to find interesting and the feedback I've gotten on the site. So I've got some ideas on how to make that book a whole lot better, but it is still the old one is still available on the site.
All right, good. We're going to have to put notes in on our site in the show notes here so people can see it. So as far as the bridges, what is it that makes the Chicago bridges that we're talking about here so special?
Well,
yeah, go, and Jim, we'll ask Pat some questions in a minute. I know Pat's a photographer, so Jim, answer that one.
Well, I think you need to ask her as well. For me, if they didn't move, they wouldn't have a whole lot of interest for me. So I'm not just a regular kind of bridge guy. I need to have some sort of, you know, instant gratification when I look at a bridge. And these bridges, for me, the specialness is the fact that they are movable and that that's the hook.
Yeah, and what's the fancy name for that type of bridge?
Well, this particular bridge is a Trunnion-Bascule bridge.
Exactly, yeah, that's right. And how many are there?
Well, downtown we've got 18. Regularly operating movable bridges, there's 29 on the Chicago River, and then there's another 10 or so down on the Calumet. Not all of those are trunnion bascules. Some of them are vertical lifts. Some of them, well, one of them is a rolling lift.
But which one is that?
That's the one at Cermak Road.
Yeah, I know. Is that near? Well, actually, this is going to show you how much I don't know. But I know when I'm shooting from the 18th Street Bridge, there's that lift bridge there.
Okay, shooting from the 18th Street Bridge, you're probably looking at the Amtrak Bridge, which is the vertical lift bridge.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Kind of like two bridges to the south of that, there is where Cermak is.
Okay.
That one is kind of unique in that it kind of rolls up on its trusses rather than rotates about a fixed point.
Well, I'm gonna have to check that one out.
Yeah, that's a fun one to watch. So if you're down in that area, you should take that one in.
So Pat, is that a good one to photograph?
The Cermak?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yes, from the water.
Say that again?
From the water.
Oh, from the water. Okay.
If you're in a boat.
Ah.
Because the Cermak Bridge actually doesn't look much different other than for the counterweights that provide the balance for the leaf of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
The counterweights for the Cermak Bridge are up high. And much like if you look at the St. Charles Airline Railroad Bridge, that's the one that is, one is always up and one is down between Chinatown and Roosevelt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The one that's got an incredible amount of graffiti on it.
I know the one, yes. Uh-huh.
Well, when you look at that bridge, it's got big counterweights at the back end of it. And Cermak is like that. So it has, but when you look at the bridge leaves themselves, they don't look a lot different to me. One of the things I noticed, I got to ride a sailboat through downtown to the boatyard last fall, and there is a lot of fall color on the South Branch, both red, yellow, and orange, and so it was interesting. I have a photo of the Cermak Bridge that got a red brick building and red foliage along the bank, and it was really striking how it all kind of pulled together. But I think the problem with the bridges south of Roosevelt is they're hard to get to. I mean, not the bridge themselves, but
in a position to shoot it, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because there's just not the access that you have north of Roosevelt.
Yeah, this is kind of embarrassing, but I was doing some exploration on, I suppose it's Google Earth, and trying to figure out where's a spot that I could stand and see this bridge and see the skyline behind it, and it's not so easy with some of those other ones.
Mm-mm. No, and the river has a little bit of a meander to it.
Right.
So, you know, once you get to Chinatown, you've got a nice shot of downtown.
Right, from that, like, 18th Street Bridge, right?
Right. Right.
Or Ping Tom Park.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I haven't shot from actually in the park, but I know what you're talking about from up top there. Yeah, and then you get that one bridge you're talking about with all the graffiti, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you guys climb up there? Did you do some of that?
No.
I wasn't sure. All right, so let's see. So, Pat, give us some just basic tips for photographing the bridges. Like, that sounds like one is get on the river itself.
Yeah, that is one. If you do an architectural tour, it would be a little slower. The water taxi is definitely cheaper,
mm-hmm.
and the water taxi does go all the way to Chinatown but you need to check the schedule and see when it goes. The problem with the water taxi is they're not into lollygagging. So you've got to be ready, but you know, snag yourself a place either at the front or the back of the boat or the bow and the stern, as I'm learning in my class, and be ready. I've found that photographing bridges, other than for the, you know, you stake a spot out and set up your tripod.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's street photography. It's a variation of street photography. You know, whether you're on the river in a boat or you're following the bridge lifts, it's an opportunities present themselves and you have to be ready.
Yeah, interesting. It's not like you have something in mind necessarily. It's more like you look for it to happen and you catch it.
Right. You know, I think if you're going to photograph the bridges, you know, in their, I guess you could say their usual state, in other words, down, then you can plan, you know, whether it's early morning, night, during the day, you know, whenever, whatever you're after, then for sure you can plant yourself someplace or, you know, plan where from what vantage point and then, you know, kind of roam in that general area and pick out what might be good spots. But when you're talking about trying to catch the bridges going up and down, it's just like being on the street. You got to be ready to move and you kind of need to know where you're going and how things are happening.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Explain what the bridge lifts are and how you figure out how you're going to catch them.
Well, it's not too tough. The city is fairly predictable by this point. They're done on a scheduled basis. We have two different seasons, the spring season and the fall season. And the spring season is what we're in now, and so we're outbound to the lake. And they start usually mid-April, and they'll go to the end of June. And usually it's a Wednesday, Saturday kind of thing. The last two or three years, there's been construction projects on the river that have sort of fouled up that that kind of regular schedule. But this year is kind of the first time in about a couple years that we're now back to one where they're fairly predictable.
And what's the best way to figure out the times? Is it really just to go to your site? Because I see you're posting it a lot. That's where I go.
Yeah. Wednesdays, Saturdays, they start on Saturdays, they start at 8 o'clock at the boatyards. On Wednesdays, they start at 9:30, I think it is.
And is it just one time? So straight down the river?
It's a one time
run,
and it's usually one bridge at a time, and it's a one-way trip. So you know these guys are committed to go to the lake, and there's no turning around until the fall season comes in. The difficult thing, you know, it's really easy to know when they're going to start. They usually meet their start time fairly closely, but the hard part is, as they go through, you know, this is old machinery, and sometimes it works just like it's supposed to, and other times there are some hangups. And you really don't know kind of what's going to happen until, you know, they're on you. So, right now it appears that the bugs are kind of worked out of the system, and they are getting to downtown within about an hour and a half or so.
So it's something you can follow.
You can follow. The hard part in the spring is trying to figure out, you know, how to get to the place where you want to be and not have to wait 2 or 3 hours for it to come. Or conversely, you know, think you got lots of time and stand there for 2 or 3 hours and then finally figure out that, oh, they've already gone by.
Right.
But they do tend to, in the spring, they do tend to get to Van Buren Street about 9:30. And then from there, you know, the city crews are leapfrogging from one bridge to the next so that they can get them open in a sequential manner. So it's not like they have to close one before they open another.
That makes sense.
Yeah, they often do that because people start screaming if too many streets are blocked off at one time. You know,
right.
But if you're lucky as a photographer, sometimes they'll have two or even three bridges open at the same time. I'm trying to think. I don't know if we've ever seen four open at the same. I don't think we've ever seen four.
No, three seems to be the max.
Yeah, and that usually happens on the main branch or main stem, as the engineers call it. although it just kind of depends. And you know, with these bridges being every block on the south branch as well as on the main branch, if there's a lot of sailboats, then you're more likely to get more than one bridge up at the same time because they can't get everybody moved through.
And squeezed into that small area. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a parking problem.
Right. Well, this sounds like kind of an adventure. I've never done it, and I've always wanted to, so this is great. So where are your favorite places to shoot it then, Pat? Or is it just to try and follow the whole thing down?
Oh, I like to follow the whole thing. But some of my favorite places are Jackson Boulevard. That's the street that's the south edge of Union Station.
Okay.
It can be done from Van Buren, too. But the Jackson Boulevard Bridge, the east side, north sidewalk, right, kind of almost to where the bridge becomes solid land, becomes land again.
Mm-hmm.
From that viewpoint, you can see three or four bridge houses up the river, but you also get the Boeing building and you get the River East building.
Oh.
And the River East has got, you know, the Boeing's got a clock up top, but, and you know, you can mess with lighting to get that to show. But the clock tower on the River East building is, I think more, well, it's an old building, so it's traditional. And they've got white lettering up there below the clock tower that says River East.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And well, you get kind of that viewpoint from Van Buren sometimes, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, so from Jackson Boulevard Bridge and Van Buren also.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another place is either Wabash or State, looking west.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at five bridges and four bridge houses. And, you get the condo that's at the end of the river. Well, I call it the end of the river, but it's called Riverbend. It's that white condo building that's on the west side of the beginning of the North Branch.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that provides a little bit of backdrop, and there's lots of, you know, good, you know, scenery down the main branch. The main problem for that right now is they're doing construction of the Riverwalk.
Right.
And so you've got cranes and barges and, you know, from a prettiness point of view, it's kind of ugly.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if you're after working Chicago, it's a perfect place. So
No, that makes sense. Do you know when they're supposed to be done with that construction?
I think that, it's going to be a while because,
okay,
because they're currently working on three more bridges, Riverwalk. Their Riverwalk now stops at State Street. I think this phase is going all the way to LaSalle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final phase is going to tie it all into Lake Street. So ultimately, you're going to be able to walk along the river from Lake Street all the way down to Lakeshore Drive and Lakefront.
And did I hear right that even though they're putting all these new buildings in that, you're going to be able to walk right along the river all along the whole way, right?
Right. Yep. Well, yeah, the river walk itself, you know, is part of the grand plan. But the city kind of is a sidelight for anybody who's putting in development along the river. They're required to provide public access and river walk type space. So, you know, even though technically what's going on Wolf Point with those three new towers that they're working on, they're obligated to put in some access to the water at that point. So, you know, general public will be able to get in that. Trump Tower is another example of that. You can walk all the way down the main stem along the north side of the river. It gets a little tricky in places. Sometimes access isn't quite what it should be, but most of those bridges or most of those buildings have some access that allows you to walk along on that side. So
yeah, and that's great for us photographers. I know that.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But I will add a caveat. All of that, almost all of the riverfront is private property with public easement. And so the biggest pain is the Boeing building. The security guards will are not in favor of you using a tripod on their property. They do not want you taking pictures of the building. And they have been known to chase people off that patio.
Yeah, I run pretty fast when that happens, I know.
Yeah. But
So even though you may be able to get there, you may not be able to use your tripod.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's particularly true. I have not had any issues with anything along the main stem, but that's certainly true on the South Branch, on the West Bank. All of those buildings that are along there, there's, I think it was the CDW is in one of those buildings. There's two black ones that are right next to
Riverside
each other.
Riverside Plaza buildings.
Yeah, and they chased me away early on when I was trying to shoot video off of that. They came and told me nicely that I needed to move or they were going to take my camera away. So
yeah, that's one of the fun parts about shooting in Chicago is dealing with security guards for sure.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, go ahead.
I go back to a couple other places to photograph the bridges. I just wanted to mention two places. One is the Cityscape Bar at the top of the Sun-Times building.
I've seen some of your shots from there. Amazing.
Yeah. And then the other one is tell me the name of the museum.
Oh, the McCormick
Bridge House and Chicago River Museum.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. They are opening this weekend for their season, and you can climb all the way to the top. The windows that you see at the top of the Michigan Avenue bridge houses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You get a view of the river both east and west. And then they just below those windows, you'll see they're circular windows.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always the cleanest.
I was just going to say that. I've been there once, and they were really, really dirty.
Yeah.
And the circular ones don't open, but they do provide a nice frame within a frame.
Oh, that's good. Hey, on the Cityscape Bar, Pat, you got any tips for shooting from up there? I did it once, went and bought a drink so that I felt like I belonged up there, and then tried to shoot at night, but I mean, it's really tough. I mean, I was just trying to hold my lens right up to the glass, and it was interesting, but you got any tips?
Well, I learned the hard way. I was taking shots during the day, and first of all, I was taking shots next to the ballroom.
Okay.
If you go west through the bank of elevators, there's a bank of windows before you get to the ballroom. And you can look straight down the South Branch.
Yes. And and it's like a big wide window, right?
Right.
Yes.
Right. And I learned the hard way that you need to get your camera right up to the glass because I had reflections galore
right.
The first time I shot that. But they'll leave you alone there. Unless a reception is going on or, you know, some type of activity, you've got all the time you want.
Okay. Well, that's a good tip then. That's just kind of right around, it's not too far from the bar itself, right?
Right. It's, if you, when you come into the lobby, you know, you see the bar on the left-hand, in the left-hand corner. Think about going go to the bar and then take a right that takes you through the access to the elevators and
right.
just keep walking. And you'll see the ballroom doors, and then look to your left, and you'll see the bank of windows.
Yeah, okay. Yep, that's exactly where we shot from. Did you ever try bringing a tripod there? I wonder if...
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
They didn't have any... They didn't have a problem. You know, like I said, you might want to check to see if there are any activities, because they do weddings there and conferences and things, and if they're doing some type of a reception, they won't let you stay in that. It's kind of an anteroom to the ballroom. They won't let you stay there. You know, I think shooting the main branch from the Cityscape Bar, which is about the only place you can get it, is tough. But and nighttime might be kind of hard because that's when bars do their business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I've been really tempted to go up there like at 11 or 12 because that's when they first open and do some daytime shots. But then you've got to deal with harsher light.
Yeah. Yeah, the best shots I've seen up there have been either night or blue hour, and I've seen some amazing ones.
Yeah, and the ones I got were, I was lucky that day. There was an amazing cloud cover, you know, and it was muting, you know, softening that light. And then all those glass towers along the South Branch were reflecting those clouds.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, it is amazing. Sometimes you think, oh, there's no way the light's any good, but the way it bounces off the buildings and with the right clouds, you're right, you can get beautiful shots.
Yeah. You know, if you've got a sky, a typical Chicago sky with no clouds, it's an awful picture.
Yes. So tell us about, you guys do tours through your site, right? Tell us about the tours.
Yeah, well, it's kind of... I've got three basic ones, and then I do custom things. Right now, what's kind of the hot item is where I'm doing tours following the lift. So
that's the one I need to go on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so what that involves, we do about an hour long walk or so, and do the South Branch, and just we talk about bridges and the history of Chicago bridges and that kind of stuff.
You're not just pointing them out. You know the history better than anyone else. You know you can answer anyone's questions and
well,
learn a lot.
I try my best and try not to lie too much.
That's good. Just a little.
Yeah, just a little. You know, I mean, you got to keep it somewhat interesting. Then when there's not lifts going on, I do kind of a short tour from Lakeshore Drive to State Street with a stop at the Bridge House Museum. And then there's a longer one that that goes from the Bridge House Museum up to Madison, and then we ride the water taxi back to the museum. And then, like I said, I've been, last year I was a guy's Father's Day present. His wife set up a tour, and we went down to Chinatown, and we hiked over to the Cermak Bridge, and we saw all the bridges down the river there, and then over to Kinzie Street and looked at that one. And so if somebody wants to do some sort of, kind of comprehensive thing, I'll do something like that too.
Nice. I like that Father's Day present. I wonder if my wife will ever listen to it. I know she won't. that's great. This is fantastic. I love your site, ChicagoLoopBridges.com. It's an amazing site. All the information you'd want. It's got Pat's wonderful photos there. One of the best websites about Chicago. Yeah, no, I love it. It's a great site, and it's where I go whenever I'm trying to get my bridge info. So thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll have to have you guys on again soon. Thank you very much. Well, I hope you liked that interview with Jim Phillips and Pat Armel. I know that I learned a couple of new places for myself, and next time I'm out there, I'm going to be looking for them. One place, that Cityscape Bar, that place is amazing. Next time I go up there, I'm going to try and use a couple of those tips from the interview. So our third segment is our Chicago location for the week, and this week it's the Chicago Theater. you guys know the Chicago Theater. Even if you're coming in from out of town, you know the Chicago Theater. It's got the big vertical sign, red, lights all around it, says Chicago up and down the thing. And then the front of it, the marquee, you've got Chicago Theater. Well, it says Chicago. And underneath it is whatever band or comedy act or whatever it is that happens to be playing or coming up soon. It's a beautiful theater. It's wonderful inside. You can shoot it inside if you go to take a tour. But tonight we're going to talk about how to shoot it at night. My favorite places to shoot the theater, well, there's a couple of them. The first one would be just straight across the street from it. So on the other side of State Street, if you set up there, there's room. There's like places where people will lock their bikes up, and then there's flower beds there. But there's plenty of room to set up and get a great shot of the Chicago Theater. You might need kind of a wide-angle lens to get it all in, but you're going to be able to get it without much problem. Go for a vertical shot. The building itself kind of goes vertically. That Chicago sign straight up and down vertically. I think that's a great shot. The other place to get it is to move south down State Street. So if you're facing the building, head down to your right and go down, I don't know, half of a block and look back up at it. Well, check it out as you move along and find the angle that you like. But as you go down, you're going to now be able to see that Chicago Theater, the vertical sign, and read that a lot easier. And that's going to give you a really nice shot looking back at the theater. One of my favorite shots is doing that with some car trails. I got down real, real low with the tripod, looking up. A bus came by. Those car trails ended up being, you know, because of the perspective, really big. And it gave just those trails can end up giving a real sense of energy and motion to a kind of a static shot. So that's something you might think about adding as well. A couple other places you might look to shoot the theater from, at the State and Lake L stop, if you start to go up the steps, so let's say you're on the east side of State Street, so the side where the Chicago Theater is. If you're there and you go to the corner of State and Lake, if you head up the steps to go to the L station, as you start to walk up, you actually get a real nice view looking back at the theater. And from the steps there, you don't have anything in your way to shoot that shot. Now, as you go up higher and you actually get into the L station, before you have to pay the fare, but once you get up in there, now you'll be shooting through some pretty grungy plexiglass. But I tried to shoot this the other day. It actually worked out pretty well. If you put your lens up real close to the thing, use some good technique for shooting through glass, you can get a decent shot. Now, that glass is so dirty, though, that the image turned out really interesting. It ended up looking very foggy, looked like it was a foggy night, and it gave kind of a cool effect. I suppose it's like using some sort of a preset or a plug-in on it, but really, I was just shooting through some really dirty glass. I ended up converting it to black and white, and in the end, it looked pretty cool. It was kind of a 1920s kind of a look to the whole photo, and you get the real big Chicago, no one's doubting where the picture was taken, you know, from the sign. So I think that's a cool shot, too. Now, if you continue on and head back down the steps on the other side, well, now you're back to the west side of the street. And as you go down those steps, you can get another angle on the Chicago Theater. So that's a few different places. And even if you head up State Street, there's a couple places where you can go further and go up closer to the river and look back at the Chicago Theater, and you can get an interesting shot of the sign. Then, of course, if you get up closer to the theater, you can get some good shots of the sign from there. Go further down State Street on the same side of the street. You can shoot it from there. Shoot underneath the marquee, all the lights. That can make kind of an interesting abstract pattern shot. You can do that at a couple of the different places around the loop down in Chicago, like places like the Palmer House or whatever, all those light bulbs underneath it. That's always an interesting shot. So those are some good places to shoot the Chicago Theater. When you're shooting it, one tough thing at night, especially when it's all lit up, is that you've got a pretty high dynamic range as far as really, really bright light bulbs and then some much darker areas that are in shadow. My first recommendation is to bracket your shots to get some exposures with that are going to be brighter and some that are going to be darker. Maybe you try and combine them together later, or maybe you just try and end up having five of them and you pick the one that you like the best. Now, if you're one of those histogram peepers and you're really worried about, oh man, I'm taking this shot, but it's really bumping up against the right edge, I know that I'm blowing out my highlights. Well, that's the lights of the theater. I mean, you're not necessarily going to be able to always control those highlights. You know, if you are shooting the sun, people will be like, oh, I was taking a picture of the sun and, oh, I blew out my highlights. I was like, well, of course you did. It was the sun. It's kind of bright. So you just got to know there's some things where you're going to blow out your highlights, and that's correct. That's the way the picture should look. So don't worry so much about blowing out the highlights. Don't worry about the histogram so much. Get it so that the main exposure looks right, so that it looks like what you remember seeing when you're standing at the Chicago Theater and looking at it. Don't worry so much about what some silly graph told you. So that's the Chicago Theater, and one of my favorite places to shoot. You'll like it. Go there for a tour sometime, but go there at night and you'll get some really cool shots. So that leads us to our pick of the week. And this week, well, we're talking about something that is a little bit older now. It's been around 4 or 5 months, but our podcast hasn't been around for too long. So that's all right. We can pick some a little bit older stuff here. And this is something that when it came out, everyone said, you got to grab it right away. Grab it right now because it's going away. But it's still here, and so maybe it will go away, so you better grab it. That thing is the Adobe Creative Cloud Photographer's Package. When the Creative Cloud first came out, the only way to get it was to get the whole package. And then eventually they said, well, if you've owned Photoshop in the past, all right, here's a package for you. But then eventually they came out with a package that you didn't have to own anything in the past, and it simply was for photographers. And for $9.99, you get Photoshop, you get Lightroom, and now you also get Lightroom Mobile. And since it's part of the Creative Cloud, you get all of the updates that they make to those immediately. You don't have to wait for another version to come out. So I think that this pricing model, people were kind of opposed to it at first, but I think it's the way to go. I think it's what you want.
I just went and looked at B&H online to see, what is it if I want to buy Adobe Photoshop?
Well, the answer is $749. If you want to buy Photoshop CS6, it's $750 for just Photoshop. And people are out there, they're saying, well, I want to own Photoshop. I don't want to subscribe to this thing. I want to own it. But that makes no sense to me because, you know, you say you want to own it, but you buy it now. Do you really think that in 2025 you're going to be using the same version of Photoshop? No, you're going to be upgrading it and you're going to be paying hundreds of dollars again to upgrade it. I think it's crazy. I think that the best thing you can do is to get this subscription. It's $10 a month. I mean, let's say you have it for 3-4 years. Every year it's going to cost you $120. 3 years is going to be $360. You're still not even to half of the Photoshop price on B&H. So I think you're crazy if you think that you want to own all these things. I think that the subscription model is great. Now, if you need other things like, I'm using Adobe Audition as far as the podcast here, or maybe you need something like Premiere for video, or you want InDesign for doing graphics and that, well, then you would want the entire Creative Cloud, and that's more like $40 or $50 a month, and that's a lot of money. But if all you want is Photoshop, Lightroom, and this new Lightroom Mobile for like your iPad and that, $9.99 a month, I don't know how you beat it. So that's what I recommend, and that is this week's pick of the week. So thank you very much for joining us. 3 episodes in the can, and so far I'm having a ton of fun. I'm really thinking that we're going to do this every week. So every week we'll come out with a new episode, the Out of Chicago podcast. We're going to keep introducing you to new places, keep introducing you to new people and photographers, and I'm going to keep giving you whatever tips I can about shooting the city. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm going to keep it up, and I hope you're enjoying it. So let's see. I feel like I should end with asking you to sign up for something or to do something along those lines. And so it still is the Out of Chicago Conference. I want you to come. I want to meet you. I want you to learn. It's going to be a fantastic weekend. It's June 27th and 28th in Chicago. Saturday, June 28th, we've got all of our classes. You're going to take six different classes. You're going to choose amongst 16 different photographers, and it's going to be a great time. There's photo walks the night before, Friday night, and there's photo walks Saturday night. So not only are you going to learn from these photographers, but you're going to go out and shoot with them. So if you have questions about HDR, Jamie Link, Brian Kaprowski, they're going to help you. If you want to learn about Chicago history and photographing the architecture, well, Lee Bay and Wendy Bright, they're going to be right there. If you want to get some tips and learn how to shoot fine art architecture, a couple of my favorite photographers, John Crouch and Angie McMonagle, they're going to be there, and all sorts of street photographers. It's going to be a wonderful time. I hope that you come sign up. It's the very first year of the Out of Chicago Conference. It's going to be amazing. Please come. It's not that much money. It's $150. Go to outofchicago.com/conference for more details about this year's conference. And that's it. That is the end of episode 3. Thank you very much for joining me. Good night. Maybe I'll explain that you're listening to this maybe in the morning, but I'm recording this at night. Like kind of like I said with my night photography, I go out and shoot at night after the kids have gone to bed. Well, same thing with the podcast. I'm recording it. Kids are sleeping. The wife is sleeping. Everyone's sleeping. So good night. Thank you very much for joining me. Love you guys. See you next time.